Bharat Maharaj, ruled the kingdom of his father, Rishabdev, the world, for many, many years, 10,000 times 1,000, many, many years. It's not 100 million, it's 10 million. And went to the Pulaha Ashram, on the banks of the Gandaki River, and in that condition of his worship, he achieved Bhava Bhakti. And was very focused on Krishna, Vasudev, Krishna, by worshipping Gayatri Mantra and making offerings to the Lord and so on. We heard the description of what process he followed. He understood, just like Vyasadeva understood in his meditation, how the living entity becomes conditioned, how the living entity becomes freed. He was intently praying upon the Supreme Lord to guide his intelligence away from anything that would disrupt his meditation upon the personality of Godhead. And sure enough, a situation arose which he could have chosen that very same thing that he was praying. And instead he was weighing back and forth. We read the verses, on the one hand, but on the other hand, and he chose the other hand. I've been practicing bhakti, but I'm a king, and this poor creature has come and taken shelter of me, and it would be wrong of me, it would be a violation of dharma of me to not give protection. So what's wrong in that? I'm giving protection. Okay, I'm giving up my spiritual practices, but I can't not give protection. So we discussed what that kind of discrimination is like. Misplaced compassion, surrendering to Maya, embracing Maya, and falling. And so the part that we're going to be discussing now this afternoon is there's maybe 15 verses in a row of elaborating on how much Maya he got himself into, how he was first was like rationalizing, weighing it out, and then choosing Maya, choosing a lower principle rather than the purpose for which he had gone to the forest. So like we were discussing, sometimes something can arise in our devotional service that like catches our attention or becomes important to us, or it's a problem or something, and we forget like the bigger picture of our life and what we're started our journey, spiritual journey, to do, and become absorbed in some detail and just get lost in the detail of something. We become attached to that something instead of the soul and the soul's mission and purpose of life. It happens. And sometimes it's, you know, more than a detour. We just get lost. Now, fortunately for us, and we'll find also in this narration, that Krishna doesn't forget, even if we get lost. So we'll cover that question of why, if he was praying so fervently to Krishna that his intelligence not become covered by diversions and distractions. Please protect me. Why the Lord didn't protect him. So we discussed that a bit. We'll discuss it some more. But first, a little inventory of just how deluded Bharat Maharaj became. It's both silly and embarrassing. It's laughable and shocking. I mean, even for one of us to do what he did would be, like, embarrassing. But for Bharat Maharaj, he was on such a high platform. To fall to such a stage, very, very embarrassing. So here's some of the verses. Due to attachment for the deer, we're starting with text 11. Due to attachment for the deer, Maharaj Bharat lay down with it, walked with it, bathed with it, and even ate with it. Can you imagine? Devotee, like, you know, hey, come on, sit down, buddy. There's some for you, there's some for me. We wouldn't do that. Thus his heart became bound to the deer in affection. When Maharaj Bharat wanted to enter the forest to collect kusha grass, flowers, wood, leaves, fruits, roots, and water, he would fear that dogs, jackals, tigers, and other ferocious animals might kill the deer. He would therefore take the deer with him when entering the forest. Now, Prabhupada is making a point. So we'll do it 2 points, the devotees and the non-devotees. So his first point is, later, because of his attachment for the deer, Bharat Maharaj became a deer. What to speak of those who are not devotees? They have attachments for dogs, cats. What's going to happen to them? It's not unclear. It's clear. How unfortunate. He writes, due to their affection for their cats and dogs, they have to take the same bodily forms in their next life. Unless they clearly increase their affection and love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he turns it around to us. Unless we increase our faith in the Supreme Lord, we shall become attracted to many other things. And that's the cause of our material bondage. Attachments don't start as attachments. They start as something far more innocent. Oh, what's a little attention over here? A little flirting over there? A little something off the center of the road, of the path of spiritual life? A little something? Like Prabhupada spoke this way about, specifically, I remember it was a morning walk in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was commenting about there was an issue during one particular Mayapur festival, and then it was not like it is now. What it is now is, it's just become very different. But what it was then was literally devotees from all over the world came. Now it's like this. It's Russia, Hindi, and Bengali. When they have their yatras, their Mayapur prakrama, they have three groups. It's three languages. They don't need translation because there's only three languages. There's not American or English-speaking people anymore that come for whatever the reason. So if you're English-speaking, you just have to learn Russian or Bengali or Hindi. Or have a translator with you if you're in the translation group. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there was an issue going on where the women were saying that men were mistreating the women. And it was like, you know, got a little energy. So it was like a groundswell coming up. Women are being mistreated by men. The children have to be quiet, but children can't be quiet. So children have to play outside. Do we have to do this every program? You're okay. You're okay because they know what to do. But these, we can't have side conversation. It's not going to work. Okay. Let's pretend I didn't say anything. Boo-hoo. Come on. Give me a break. In the afternoon, in Prabhupada's schedule, he, from like 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, so it was after lunch, everyone had digested their lunch, and he would allow, in his regular schedule, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, it was darshan time. Sometimes that was when invited guests would come, when professors or government people or people like that would come, or if it wasn't somebody like that, Prabhupada opened the doors and the devotees could come. So one time was one of those. And he was sitting at his desk, on, you know, as we were sitting by the floor. And he came in and sat down and looked around the room. And he didn't say anything. And it went on for a painful, it seemed like forever. Although it was probably just a short period of time. I know what my thoughts were. My thoughts were, we're like people that are used to television. You know, you turn on the television entertains you. And that's what your spiritual master does. He's supposed to entertain you. And if he doesn't entertain you, you don't know what to do. Because that's what you're supposed to do, be entertained by your spiritual master. But he didn't say anything. He didn't entertain us. He just looked around the room and then, you know, looked at his desk and was moving some papers. And it was a long time. It was very uncomfortable. And then from the back of the room, one of the ladies raised her hand and brought up the issue. Prabhupada. And Prabhupada went, hmm? He turned to his secretary, you know, he heard what he said, we all heard what she said, but he turned to his secretary and said, what did she say? And the secretary repeated. And he didn't even look at her, he just looked at the secretary and said, this is not very good. He thought about it, this is not very good. He said, it's also not very good for women to try to attract the attention of men. Right away he turned it right around and said, why are women wearing very colorful saris? There's only one reason, to attract the men. And because the women are attracting the men, now there's a problem between men and women. So the men should not mistreat the women, the women should be very chaste, and that's the Vedic system. And if we act that way, we won't have a problem. He like turned the wave right back against them, saying, you know, you take your part, the men should act there properly, and the women should act properly, and we'll have a nice arrangement. It was very interesting. But the real... So on that same... the next morning was a morning walk. And Prabhupada was speaking on the point of, you Western boys and girls, you like to flirt with Maya. Not only the men like to flirt with women, the women like to flirt with men. And it's like he gave the example of going out on a branch of a tree. And you go out as far as you can on the branch of the tree before you hear it crack. And then you come running back to the trunk of the tree so you don't fall. But you do this all the time, you boys and girls. You flirt with Maya. You get in trouble. So don't flirt with Maya. Stay very strict. And stay near the trunk of the tree. Stay in line with the instructions of the spiritual master. And you're protected. So that's the message. The thematic message of at least one of the thematic messages is that Prabhupada is repeating in his purports. We must be very cautious in the execution of our devotional service. There's the path to Krishna. And there are other options that one can choose. A little off-center. It starts innocent. Doesn't look like anything so terrible. You know, give examples of something that doesn't look so terrible, and the next thing you know, very quickly it becomes an attachment. And that is something that you, your mind is thinking about, you're absorbed in thoughts about something, him or her or it or something, that then becomes like a problem for you to manage. And it's embarrassing, so you don't share it with anybody, and you know, you've got this private thing going on of some enjoyment that's not Krishna conscious at all, but you do it anyways because now it's an attachment. And that's what this section is describing. It's Bharat Maharaj's attachment. But Prabhupada's point is the path of bhakti is kevala. Ahoituki. Avyabhichari, it's unmixed. That's bhakti. Bhakti is not mixed with jnana or karma. Bhakti is unmixed. Anyabhilashta shunyam, no other desire. Because when there's some other desire along with the desire for bhakti, then the mind isn't steady and you can't chant properly, you can't serve properly, you can't interact with others properly. It's not satisfying to you as an individual. It's not satisfying to others who you associate with. And that those conditions exist in the beginning stage, that's okay. But make your choices clearly and be very careful as you progress on the path of bhakti. And then he says the same thing again in the next purport. Here's the verse. It's more of, you know, Bharat Maharaj's la-la land. It's text number 13. When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Bharat Maharaj due to its childish behavior. Bharat Maharaj would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap, or while sleeping on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. So, Prabhupada's comment is, in our life, similarly, in preaching, or in living your life, you must come in contact with different material things. And you have to, in a polite way, in a proper way, interact with those material things. Be very cautious when doing so. Know that this is danger area, and keep your mind fixed on the proper purpose. Because if you're inattentive, attraction for enjoying those other things will take place. It will displace your spiritual purpose and take over. If we remember this, there's no chance of our being victimized by material activities. So we have to be, the principle is, we have to be attached to something. Our process is to become attached to Krishna while taking up our lives of developing our attachment to Krishna. We come in contact with things that are material or can take one's attention away from Krishna. Be cautious, be vigilant, and stay on target with the purpose. be clear of the goal of your life, the purpose of your activity. Otherwise, the mind will become restless in contact with those things. And even once your mind becomes restless in contact with those things, when those things are gone, the mind will be restless, hankering for those things, or contemplating about those things. And everybody knows what I'm talking about, because we all have something. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be in the material world. It's not something that's embarrassing. It's just a fact. We all have something. And we hold on to that something and covet that something, and we're attached to that door, a whole bag full of somethings. Be very careful. Prabhupada writes, because of his attraction for the deer was so intense, Bharat Maharaj could not concentrate upon worshipping the Lord or performing his ritualistic ceremonies. Even though he was engaged in worshipping the deity, his mind was restless due to his inordinate affection. Family life is one of those things that can be like that. Affection must be there, otherwise how can there be family life? And if it's inordinate affection, then one's mind becomes distracted from the goal, what to speak of. It's just even disturbed in day-to-day things. Inordinate affection disrupts the progress of spiritual life. So the message isn't become an impersonalist, or the message isn't just renounce everything. That's both are become desireless. We can't be desireless, because the souls have desire. Let those desires be in pursuit of our relationship with Krishna, or in relation with Krishna, and stay focused on that purpose. The example in the next verse, text 15, is the example of a miser who loses some money or some wealth. He becomes really agitated. In the purport, Prabhupada speaks of a pauper, and I've heard him speak this many times, and now I know where the scriptural reference is. He gives the examples. Supposing there's a poor man, a pauper. Somehow, some great windfall fortune comes his way, and he becomes so happy, and then all of a sudden he loses that good fortune. Somehow it just disappears. What happens? He spirals down into a terrible lamentation. Now, commonly Prabhupada would use that to describe the mood of separation for a great devotee when they're anticipating seeing Krishna or meeting Krishna or experiencing Krishna. And like Lord Chaitanya, suddenly he would see Krishna. We were in the Jagannath Vallabha Gardens. He would see Krishna and he would run toward Krishna. And Krishna would smile and disappear. Like the pauper who then gets some great fortune, he becomes very happy and then he disappears. So he would run it. Where did Krishna go? And smell the aguru fragrance of Krishna's body. And all of his senses would want to become like smelling instruments to smell the fragrance of Krishna's body or hear the sound of Krishna's flute. And like a madman, he would went through the Jagannath Balam Gardens looking for Krishna. That's when there is attachment for Krishna. But when there isn't attachment for Krishna, then some attachment is going to form for something else, and in the absence of that something else, one becomes mad. Not spiritually, but clinically. Mad. And that's what happened to Bharat Maharaj. It's over a deer, not about losing Krishna or losing his devotional practices. He becomes obsessed with the deer. In the purport, Prabhupada's advice is, by following the teachings of Rupa Goswami, we can transfer that attachment to Krishna. And Rupa Goswami's advice is, just like young boy, young girl become attracted to each other, and their minds can't for a moment stop thinking of each other, let my mind be like that in relation to Krishna. Let Krishna be the object of my attachment. Now, go back in time. Previously, Bharat Maharaj was like that. Very elevated in that standard, but he let go and consciously took shelter of something else. And how embarrassing. Bharat Maharaj would think, alas, the deer is now helpless. I am now unfortunate, and my mind is like a cunning hunter, or is always filled with cheating propensities and cruelty. This deer has put faith in me, just like a good man who has a natural interest in good behavior, forgets the misbehavior of a cunning friend, and puts his faith in him. Although I have proved faithless, will this deer return and place his faith in me again? So the deer has gone. He's like the miser who lost his money, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who lost sight of Krishna. He's Bharat Maharaj who has lost sight of the deer, and he's thinking, due to my impiety, the deer placed trust in me, and now I've neglected that deer's trust in me, and now he's gone. But then he's thinking, Atmavan Manyate Jagat, he's very pious, although I'm impious. He's very pious, and maybe by his piety he'll come back again, despite my lack of qualification. Prabhupada is thinking, that's how he's thinking, because actually he's the pious person. He's thinking the deer is also pious, and to one degree it's an exhibition of Bharat Maharaj's piety that he was showing compassion to the deer. An impious person wouldn't care. He's a pious person, he cared. So that's good. He's a pious person, he cared. But he overly became attached to the bodily welfare of the deer and lost it. Again, in the purport of text 17, Prabhupada is commenting that in this world, in this Kali Yuga world that we live in, when a person is extending themselves so much for another being, even another in the lower form of life, that's appreciated. You know, save the whales and save the porpoises and save the extinct species in Hanoi. We just saw this thing. There's a 1,000-year-old turtle, they say. The scientists say that he's very, very old, and he surfaced because the lake that he's in is contaminated water. He's got some infection, so he surfaced to catch some air, and they saw that it was cut and it was infected. There's some religious people that say, you know, it's part of some ancient legend that this turtle, something, 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 he saved the people from some sword or something like that. And so, you know, he's that same person who's now like a worshipable something in Hanoi. In fact, that's where the name Hanoi comes from. So they've got this like big expensive money and a big thing to try to find the turtle and find out what the infection is and cure him so he can live for another 1,000 years. But they couldn't catch him. You know, completely absorbed, like, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and scores of men round the clock for days and days trying to find this turtle. They couldn't find him. He escaped. Scuba divers and the whole thing. So it's just sacred turtle. If you're not attached to the personality of God, you're going to be attached to something, and that something can become an obsession and take you completely into illusion. Although from the mundane point of view of morality and concern for other living beings, it looks like, you know, wow, these people are doing a good thing. Just as Bharat Maharaj had it all rationalized that what he was doing was the right thing. So it goes through, I'm not going to read all the verses, it goes through a whole day from morning, midday, evening, the sun sets, and he's got this whole thing going on in his mind about the sun has set, and my piety has now closed, but maybe the piety of the deer will save him and he'll come back. He sees the moon and sees the moon, took the spots on the moon like marks on a deer, and he's like, you know, he's over the top. Speaking like, as Prabhupada says, Sukadeva Goswami says, he's speaking like a madman. On the one hand, you know, it's humorous to read about it. It's just, it's Bharat Maharaj, it's an old history, it's somebody, you know, long ago. But on the other hand, as mentioned, we all have our little something or others, the foolish attachments to something or other. And commonly we don't share them with anybody, it's too embarrassing, or it's just so petty and I'll get over it, or something like that. But, you know, the principle that's being described is it takes us away. And it's, you know, it's just illusion. And, you know, how to cut illusion when it becomes so strong. So strong. Maybe there's some period of time it's like, you know, but laxity, and something will come and something will grow quickly. It's just like a garden. When you're, those of you that have done gardening, those things that you want, a lot of care and cultivation, it takes time. But how quickly do weeds grow? Really fast. Really fast. Then you spend your whole time weeding the weeds and the thing that you want. And because you put water in the soil, and the water doesn't go just to the thing you want to grow. The water also goes to the weeds. And the weeds, the roots of the weeds grow very quickly and take all the water. So the thing that you want to grow isn't growing. And the weeds are... So, spiritual life is compared sometimes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared it to gardening and pulling the weeds in your garden. Those undesirable distraction things that seem simple in the beginning and can really get out of control. Purport to text 23, Prabhupada writes, "It is said that when a person becomes overly involved in loving affairs, he forgets himself, as well as others, and he forgets how to act and how to speak. It is said that once when a man's son was blind, since birth, the father, out of staunch affection for the child, named him Padmalochan, Lotus Eye. This is the situation arising from blind love." So Bharat is seeing the tracks of the deer and the earth and saying, oh, now the earth has become sanctified by the tracks of the deer on the earth. How fortunate is this Mother Earth that the idea is traversing her form. Anyway. Then Sukadeva Goswami comments, "My dear King Parikshit," in this way, Bharat Maharaj was overwhelmed by an uncontrollable desire, which was manifest in the form of a deer. Notice the language. The deer was the object, but the tendency to enjoy separately from Krishna was the essence. The essence took a particular form. Somebody else's essence may take a different form, or different form, or different form, but the essence is desiring independent enjoyment from Krishna. Due to the fruitive results of his past deeds, he fell down from mystic yoga, austerity, and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If it were not due to his past fruitive activity, how could he have been attracted to the deer after giving up the association of his own sons and family, considering them stumbling blocks in the path of spiritual life? How could he show such an uncontrollable affection for the deer? This was definitely due to his past karma. That's in the verse. And in the purport, Prabhupada raises the question, huh? How could this be his past karma? How could this be his past karma? Because, according to scripture, many references in scripture, you engage in devotional service, your past karma is burned up. So how is it due to his past karma? He quotes Brahma Samhita, "Karmani nirdhita kinchucha bhakti bhajam." For those engaged in devotional service, bhakti bhajan, the results of past deeds are indemnified or removed. According to this scriptural reference, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. The conclusion must be that Bharat Maharaj purposefully became over addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. So it's like, you know, we know what this experience is. If there's some temptation or tendency to, other than strict devotional service, go there and flirt with that not strict devotional service, some voice says, "Don't do that." And then another voice says, "Come on, there's so many people doing. What's the harm? Just a little bit. Got to be so strict with yourself." I've told this story many times, but when I was a young boy, something like, I think it was second grade, so I must have been all of 7 years old, our family moved from one town to another town. And when we went to the new town, the priest of that place, because we were going to a certain church, and so from another church, he came to receive us in our home. And being polite, as one is in cultured people, when your guest comes through your home, what are you supposed to do? Minimally, a place to seat, and some water, something to refresh them, and some kind words, those three things. A place to seat, to sit, some refreshment, some kind words. So the priest came to our home, and my parents asked him, "Would you like something to drink? Would you like some water? Would you like some coffee? Or would you like some wine?" And he said, "Wine." And, you know, all the members of our family went, "What?" You know. So they brought him some wine. And I remember my sister, one of my older sisters, asked the priest, "Is it okay for a priest to drink wine?" And the priest's answer was, "In moderation." I was a 7-year-old boy, and I remember very clearly thinking, "This is ridiculous." In moderation. in moderation means you can be with another man's wife in moderation, and it's all right. It's just in moderation. Just a kid. But it was obvious to me, you know, if it's not to be done, you don't do it. That's it. You know, it's a priest, come on. You're guiding the rest of us. Sure enough, later on, some 7-8 years later, the guy was run out of town for, in moderation, associating with other men's wives. Ran him out of town. Get out of town. You're not a priest. You're a cheater. But, you know, they should have known that right from get-go. So, in moderation is not all right. But the mind can sometimes trick us to say, it's okay. In moderation. It's only, you know, so many other people are doing this too, and what's the big deal? And I just, you know, won't advertise it or just quietly, privately do this little thing on the side. When you listen to that other voice, some alarm should go on saying, bing, 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 you know, like, watch out. This is dangerous territory. Be very careful. That's the theme here. Be very cautious. Now, it's not to impose some standard upon ourselves that isn't something that's sustainable, but whatever it is, keep the goal very clear, and as your capacity permits, move towards that goal. That shouldn't be something that we change. Whatever your capacity is, you can sustain, do that, and make steps towards the goal. Don't feel it's okay. Again, don't beat yourself up if you're not able to maintain something or other standard. Maintain a standard that you can maintain and keep taking steps towards the goal. Now, this is Bharat Maharaj, and it says specifically in the verse that it was due to his karma. Now, it's due to his karma. This is explained in the commentary as we go along. It's due to his karma that he was given an opportunity to extend protection, and he had a choice to make on the platform of the soul or on the platform of the body in forgetting Krishna, and he chose the second. Prabhupada writes, this is the purport of text 26, to immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase the desire for mature devotional service. That's the statement. That's like the lead statement. The rest is explaining it. Although Bharat Maharaj was awarded the body of an animal, he did not forget what had previously happened due to his purposeful mistake. Due to his purposeful mistake, he had to pay for that mistake. He was very anxious to get out of his deer body, and this indicates that his affection for devotional service was intensified, so much so that he was quickly to attain perfection in a brahmana body in his next life. It is with this conviction that we declare in our Back to Godhead magazine that devotees like the Goswamis living in Vrindavan, who purposely commit some sinful activity, are born in the bodies of dogs, monkeys, and tortoises in that holy land. Thus they take on lower life forms for a short while, and after they give up those animal bodies, they are again promoted to the spiritual world. Such punishment is only for a short period and is not due to past karma. It may appear to be due to past karma, but it is offered to rectify the devotee and bring him to pure devotional service. So Prabhupada is being very liberal, very generous, and saying that purposeful sinful activity committed by Dharmavasis has a consequence similar to that of Bharat Maharaj, that is, they become an animal. But because their place of residence is Vrindavan, they don't, not engaging in devotional, in any sinful activities as an animal, and they die as an animal, then they go to the spiritual world. So it's their last, all those monkeys running around, the tortoises swimming around, and the hogs lying around. That's their last time around. But do we want to become a hog? A monkey? A tortoise? Even no one in Hanoi? Or wherever? It's fortunate birth, but it's not what really can happen. And that's Vrindavan. Sometimes somebody may, you know, by circumstance, not even be able to die in Vrindavan if they do some sinful activity and say, that's okay because I'll just have another birth and become an animal for one birth and then go back to Godhead. But they may not even die in Vrindavan. It's too risky. Besides, it's, you know, it's the wrong program. But he's explaining that's what happened. That the Lord, the personality of Godhead, provided him an opportunity due to his past activity to choose to exercise his kshatriya capacity to protect the deer and then let the deer go on his way or something, or to choose the other, and he chose the wrong one. But because of his great devotional service, it was a short period of time, and as we're going to hear coming up, his in that deer body, his desire to not make the same mistake again was very strong. So what I think I'm going to do is I'll just elaborate on this point a bit, we'll do some discussion, and then we'll go on and finish the chapter, and then some more discussion, because during this section I'd like to finish the chapter. But I'd like this point to be very, very clear. There's a purpose in everything that we do. We should not be mindless or robotic or mechanical in our devotional service, because that absent, you know, just out to lunch expression of bhakti is another purpose. It's trying to be an enjoyer. And, you know, my attention is on enjoyment while I'm doing my bhakti rather than doing my bhakti for the purpose of what bhakti is for. You follow the point? If we're in a mechanical, I'll say it slowly again, if we're in a mechanical zone, it means our attention is on something else. We're doing, but our attention is on something else. And that something else becomes more important to us than the bhakti. So don't stay in that zone. If you see yourself doing something mechanically, like, you know, whatever it is, putting on your tilak or paying obeisances or attending Mangal Arati or not attending Mangal Arati or going, you know, chanting your japa and, you know, your attention is zooming all over the place. When you see that that's happening, any one of those things, hit the refresh button. Be purposeful in the activity, because that's what bhakti is. The essence of bhakti is not the activity, it's the devotion within the activity. The activity helps awaken the devotion. The essence is the devotion. Trying to approach Krishna and appeal to Krishna for his loving service. It's not mechanical. We can't capture Krishna by any mechanical thing. Making offerings to Krishna. Krishna doesn't need anything. Calling his name. Krishna doesn't need his name called. The benefit, the person who's benefiting is us. It's to awaken our bhakti, our devotion. This, in one sense, we can say this narration, Krishna is providing this situation of Bharat Maharaj to caution us. You know, if you take it the wrong way, you could think, oh, if this can happen to Bharat Maharaj, what about me? I'm just a little speck compared to Bharat Maharaj. How is it possible that I can achieve Krishna Bhakti? And that's the wrong way to take it. The right way to take it is, one way to take it is, Krishna is showing us by example, be very careful. Because even one can become very advanced, a very, very great personality, but due to inattention and carelessness and not being careful, you can fall. So be careful. That's the message. Be very careful. Where are you placing your consciousness? What's the purpose for which you're doing each of the things that you do? Be mindful. Be present. Be Krishna conscious. And little petty desires for sense gratification can expand very quickly and consume us, become attachments, and just displace our neophyte Krishna consciousness, make us lose our determination. Be careful. In everything that we do, there's a moment of choice. In fact, moment to moment is a series of little choices. Choose Krishna. Consciously choose Krishna. That's bhakti. And when we choose Krishna, then the fruitive tendency or karmic tendencies are dissolved. That's the Sarvadharmam verse. You're on the path, and it's not just an event. Okay, I surrender to Krishna. But it's a continuing surrender. It's a moment to moment, a renewing our surrender to Krishna. And that becomes our life, just a being surrendered to Krishna. And our past karma is dissolved by that. So now I'll go over one more time what I kind of prematurely went to because you were asking questions about it. This analysis of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about prarabdha karma, and he says there are two kinds, auspicious and inauspicious. Auspicious is something that's from our past and it's placed before us at present, and when we face that something that was in our past and now is before us in present, and we utilize or connect with that opportunity to increase our dependency upon Krishna, our surrender to Krishna, our exclusive shelter in Krishna. That is an opportunity to dissolve that past tendency. Not only the karma of our past, but the tendency to repeat history, do the same things again. It's a test, but it's an opportunity. That's auspicious. That's his analysis. And inauspicious, prarabdha karma, is something from the past is placed before us, and it decreases our attachment to Krishna. And that's largely a non-devotee. It increases their involvement in matter, in forgetfulness of Krishna. So for devotees, we have this other type. So desires within the heart determine or bring into our lives different configurations of matter. Just like if you say you have a they have this saying that you may leave a place, but you don't leave your karma. It goes with you, or your mind goes with you. There's something you're struggling with, so I'm going to leave this situation. And you leave the situation. You go to some other situation, and there it is again. It's another set of people, another set of names, but the same dynamic keeps playing itself out. Because we take our karma with us. We take our minds with us. So the solution is not just leave. The solution is take shelter of Krishna. You see the situation of whatever it is, life, and whatever life brings your way is an opportunity to take shelter of Krishna, and you do like that. And by Krishna's internal potency, that tendency to be the enjoyer dissolves, and Krishna being the enjoyer takes its place, and Krishna helps you get the intelligence how to work the thing out. Or at least, you know, to endure through the situation so that on the other side, you're Krishna conscious. And in between, you're becoming Krishna conscious. That's the auspicious Prarabdha Karma. And for a non-devotee, their life is just a rerun of stuff happening again. And stuff makes desires, makes things happen, and you act in a certain way and it happens again. And then you, so based on that, you've got a new set of karmas, a new set of impressions, a new set of desires, and a new set of experiences, just a rerun of the old ones. Slightly different, very, it's like a dream. Like it just keeps, you know, rerun of the same dream. You have, ever have dreams like that? They're like certain themes in the dream. I've had such dreams and I've had other devotees describe that they have such dreams. Slightly different, little, you know, something's different, but basically the same theme rerunning. And then life is like that too. And it, where's the end to it? Just keep investing in that dream state and it just makes another one. We don't have to do that. We have a choice. And so it's a purposeful choice. No, thank you. I choose Krishna. Here's an interesting San Diego Purana, Madhu Narayan story. There's a, he gave the name, Mr. Tyagi, I think is his name, was a smart Brahmin, whatever his name is, smart Brahmin, and his wife is an aspiring disciple of Jayapataka Maharaj, and they have nice children, but he's been like, you know, not participating. He doesn't interfere with his wife going to the temple, but one of those kind of people, smart Brahmin kind of person. And he got some very, very serious disease. And as he was becoming extremely, like, going, almost gone, many people were coming, so Buddy Ryan went to meet him at the hospital. And he could see, it was like, you know, goodbye, Mr. Smarta Brahman. We won't be seeing you again, I don't think. So he said, whatever you do, take shelter of Krishna and pray to Krishna. And, you know, that was his parting words. And then this man went into a coma some short time after that. So some, you know, some long period of time, I forget, you know, a few weeks or a couple of weeks or something like that. Extended coma. You know what coma means? From scriptural explanation, what the destination of the soul is unknown. It hasn't been determined. And so the body is unfit for habitation, but it doesn't leave because the next destination is not determined. After a long period of time, the man came out of a coma. And everyone was like, you know, his eyes opened and he started to speak. And he asked for Bhadri Narayan to come and see him. So there, Bhadri came into the hospital surrounded by the doctors and the family members. And the man said, four times they came. And the doctor said, yeah, for four times his life symptoms were almost gone. But then he miraculously came back. And he said, no, four times they came. And then the relative said, yeah, we came four times. And then he said, no, four times they came. And Bhadri said, you mean the Vishnu Dutas? And he said, no, the bad ones. Four times they came. And then I said to them, I am not going with you. I am taking shelter of Krishna. And they left. And then they came again. And I said to them the same thing. I am not going with you. I am taking shelter of Krishna. And they left. And this happened four times. And after the fourth time, they left and didn't come back. And then I came out of the coma. And he said, the room... The Vishnudutas came the fourth time. The Vishnudutas came and said, he's taken shelter of Krishna. You leave him alone. And they left, not to come back again. And then my coma broke. Madhvi, telling the story, said, the room was silent. You could have heard a pin drop. The doctors, the relatives, hearing from, it's like from a man that was dead and he came back to life saying, Vishnudutas, and this man was like an atheist, like no Krishna. Religious, but not, an atheist, a religious atheist. Now, I'm taking shelter of Krishna. So, where we choose to take shelter determines the outcome of the events of our life. Not that the events of our... We may have to take responsibility for our prior misuses of free will, our prior purposeful mistakes. As Bharat Maharaj was taking responsibility by becoming a deer for his previous purposeful mistake, he became a deer. But in summary, what's being presented in the commentary is Krishna wanted to help him even after he made a purposeful mistake, like the question was raised. He was praying sincerely, please protect me from making those kinds of mistakes. Krishna's protection, he didn't interfere with the choice, but he gave him a circumstance where he wouldn't make that purposeful mistake again. He gave him a deer's body, a remembrance of his previous body, and a sense of deep remorse over his past mistake. There's a place in our Vaishnava life for remorse for our previous mistakes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote an essay, many things he wrote, but one of them was an essay called Pancha Sangskar. And in that Pancha Sangskar, he describes that the tapa for a Gaudiya Vaishnava is precisely that, regret for our past mistakes. Because when there's sincere regret for our past mistakes, Krishna cleanses the heart from the mistake and the reaction to the mistake and even the tendency to make the same mistake again. It shouldn't be obsessive, but there should be deep, sincere repentance. And I'm going to read to you some verses from Ajamila's repentance. This is after he saw the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas and heard that nice Bhagavatam class given by the Vishnudutas about what is Dharma and Adharma. And then they left, and then the Yamadutas left. Here's Bharat Maharaj's thoughts. After hearing the discourse between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, Ajamila could understand that religious principles... Ajamila could understand the religious principles that act under the three modes of material nature. These principles are mentioned in the three Vedas. Anyways, Ajamila said, alas, being a servant of my senses, how degraded I became. I fell down from my position as a duly qualified brahmana and begot children in the womb of a prostitute. Alas, all condemnation upon me. I acted so sinfully that I degraded my family tradition. Indeed, I gave up my chaste and beautiful young wife to have sexual intercourse with a fallen prostitute accustomed to drinking wine. All condemnation upon me. My father and mother were old and had no other son or friend to look after them. Because I did not take care of them, they lived with great difficulty, alas. Like an abominable lower class man, I ungratefully left them in that condition. Now it is clear that as a consequence of such activities, a sinful person like me must be thrown into hellish conditions meant for those who have broken religious principles and must therefore suffer extreme miseries. Was this a dream that I saw, or was it reality? I saw four fearsome men with ropes in their hands coming to arrest me and drag me away. Where have they gone? And where have those four liberated and very beautiful persons gone who released me from arrest and saved me from being dragged down to the hellish regions? As we have learned from the descriptions in the fifth canto, the hellish planets are situated. That's the purport. I am certainly most abominable and unfortunate to have merged in the ocean of sinful activities, but nevertheless, because of my previous spiritual activities, I could see those four exalted personalities who came to rescue me. Now I feel exceedingly happy because of their visit. So he goes on. He's lamenting in a number more verses in the same way what an abomination my life has become, and what great fortune, and I will not make the same mistake. This part of regret is not just like staying there in regret. It's the determination, I will not make the same mistake again. The determination and the commitment and the conviction to never deviate again. That's what happened to Bharat Maharaj in the life as a deer. The laws of material nature are very strict. And it's not because we're devotee and we offer some nice prayers sincerely that we're not subject to the laws of nature. We have to pay for mistakes that we make. Now, the way that we pay for those mistakes that we make, it's being explained here. It's the duration of it is shortened, and on the other side of that shortened duration, a very strong, greatly strengthened determination to stay the course in pure devotional service is given to us by Krishna. Our determination is strengthened. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is punished in such a way that his eagerness to attain the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva is increased. That's our punishment. Such a way that our determination to attain the lotus feet of Vasudeva is increased. Even if we slip. Don't slip. It's not nice to suffer. Devotees don't like to see other devotees suffer. But if that happens, Krishna is very kind. It's not ordinary. A devotee is never in that condition, ordinary. Through the medium of Bharat Maharaj, Krishna teaches us that we must be careful in the discharge of devotional service. If we want to keep our minds completely fixed without deviation, we must engage them in devotional service full time. No wasting of time. No frivolous talk, sleep, or voracious eating, Prabhupada says. Don't let your senses go astray. Don't let your mind go astray. Don't waste time. If you do, then there's a consequence for that, but the advice is don't do that. Avyartha kalatvam. Every moment of our lives should be used in Krishna's service. And if we live by that principle, that secures our position in the spiritual world. So when he became a deer, just to wrap it up, he became a deer. It was at a distant place. It wasn't the same Pulaha Ashram. It's some other mountain range. Kalanjara Mountains. mentioned specifically by Shukadeva Goswami. He left his mother deer in the Kalanjana mountain range, went back to Pulha Ashram, and stayed there, where other sages were engaging in their austerities and conversing in topics about Krishna, and he would hear their topics about Krishna, take the remnants of their prasadam, and wait out his life term as a deer. Remaining in that ashram, the great King Bharat was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, he remained in that ashram and ate dry leaves only. And he was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the super soul. And that way he waited for the death in his body of a deer, bathing in that holy place. He finally gave up his body. So that's not the remedy for us. We just, you know, wait out our sentence. We have, if there's some deviation, some problem, something, constant chanting of the holy name is what's being prescribed, in the sense, the purport, or in this chapter. By constantly chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposely falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished, at least for one lifetime, like Bharat Maharaj. So any discussion on... This is the end of chapter 8. Yes. Svapamapya Svatarnasya, it's eternal. That's what happened. Except he took like a special little detour. Because he was a Kshatriya. The life after the deer, he became a Brahmana. But he wasn't just an ordinary Brahmana, he was Mahabhagavata. A great, great devotee. Although he concealed that identity. He had this remembrance, even, you know, through two lifetimes. So, what happened to Bharat Maharaj was an exception to the rule that you just mentioned. And there was two reasons why it was an exception. One is, his mind was on the body of the form of a deer when he died, and so that's the state that he attained, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. But also because the Supreme Lord was intervening and giving him a special opportunity, unique opportunity, to increase his hankering and determination for pure devotional service, despite having chosen something other. That is, he gave him the body of a deer and a remembrance of his previous life as a king. How uncomfortable. So it's unique. It's an exception to the rule. The verse that you referred to is that's the rule. The rules can have their exceptions. Krishna can make a rule and adjust the rule in certain circumstances. Does that address your question or no? Partly. The little bit of devotion, the rest of us that aren't so exalted, the little bit of devotional service, and then deviation from the path, that's the rule. What you described is what happens. Either or. Either birth in the heavenly planets, duration for a long period of time, coming back and continuing where you left off, or just continuing where you left off. In the body of a aristocratic family or a Brahmin family, or even best as a devotee. Take birth in a devotee family, where from childhood one is trained in devotional service. There's no, like, you know, sightseeing. Right away. Going to the heavenly planets is like sightseeing. Okay? There's your answer. Yes, there's a difference, but because you can just say what the difference is, just say the question back again. There's the difference. Someone who starts doesn't make much advancement and then dies is someone that starts and stops practice. We have to pay for that deviation of stopping our practice. Part of it is the suffering of the rest of that life, but also some kind of tribulation coming to us in the course of the next life. But at least in the next life, one may right away be born in the devotee family, or one may not be born in a devotee family, have to endure material life, and then take up devotional life again. So it's not, these situations are not so like bucket oriented. Does it fall into this bucket or that? There's a continuum. We have categories because that helps us understand things, but it's either or. There's gradations, and so the short answer is, as I said, if someone takes up devotional service and leaves devotional service, they're going to have to take responsibility for having that worldly mindedness where they desisted in their devotional service. But they get the benefit of that devotional service at whatever point in time they've compensated for or paid for or taken responsibility for. They're leaving devotional service. At some point they take up devotional service again. At least the opportunity is given for them to do so. And that's a great fortune, being given the opportunity to do so. How many entities, human beings are there on this planet that apparently have no devotional service, no access? You ever thought about that? I've thought about that a lot. My travel, there's like stretches and huge numbers of people that don't have a clue about devotional service. All over the world. Yikes. And to be in that situation, and when will that time come? Will I again get devotee association? And I'm not even thinking I want devotee association. I just know I don't like this situation. And having not a clue of what to do about it. That's painful. One who's covered may not recognize the fullness of that pain, but it's painful. So there's gradations. It's not buckets. Yes, there's a difference. We pay for our mistakes. We pay for our purposeful misuse of free will. We pay for it. In the various degrees that they come up. Yes?
Do you
You're okay? You're done. Okay. Yes? Yes? Do you want to follow up on that?
My question is different than his.
Different than his. Okay, go to the next one. Go ahead.
Maharaj, as you told in the class, mechanical doing our practice should not be done. Otherwise, like, our mind is somewhere else, and we want to enjoy those things, we are doing mechanical. Simultaneously, our attachment should not be continuing, or anatta should not be continuous. And we heard that we should take our baby steps.
Yeah.
So, what is that baby steps means?
Depends on the individual. For one person, it's this, and for another person, it's that. It depends. It's very individual. This is a principle. What you just brought up is a principle. And what it is depends upon the situation, time, place, circumstance. What's a small step depends on the time, place, circumstance. You have some particular time, place, circumstance in mind, and you want to know what particular step to take? That's not what you're asking. You're asking broadly, and broadly it's a tense.
So specifically, the situation should be discussed with mentors and...
Yes, that's right. That's why we have people guiding us. Okay. Yes.
Even right now in this class, we are just getting to know how merciful is how nasty is being in this material world without having attachment to Krishna. Now and then when we get glimpsed, we feel that we need to develop this strong relation, strong, we need to come to, say, like, the mood, somehow or the other, we have to make some
strong resolve, strong determination.
Yeah, strong. We want to intensify our desire. That's what
okay, we want to intensify our desire.
And then, just my question is that, what is the practical application of intensifying this desire? And then,
what's the practical application of it?
Yes, and then what is
depends on the time, place, circumstance.
And then, what is the balance of? Desire versus expectation.
The difference between desire and expectation is effort and results. If we're very clear about what our position constitutionally is, that's the effort side. Our desire should be to make a very sincere effort. And the expectation is, Krishna, you're the master. You know best. So I simply want your mercy in whatever form you give it. That's ideal. Quite often, it's not like that. We still think that we're the controller, and that is, the outcome should be such and such, and we have an outcome in mind. And if it doesn't come out like the outcome in mind, we feel, what's wrong with Krishna? He doesn't understand the right way to do things. We become disappointed. And when we become disappointed, we're thinking we're disappointed in Krishna, but it's not we're disappointed in Krishna. We're just like, we're trying to be little controllers again. We're doing the same program under a different banner. And, so Krishna can do different things with that situation. My experience is that in short, Krishna helps us, if we're sincere, Krishna helps us to get it, that we're the servant, he's the master. And when we get it, truly get it, then he may very well make things come out just as we had wanted it to come out. But he also may not. And it, in either case, it's very clear. He's the master and the controller, and we're the servant. And that's nice. But if we don't get it, then we continue in the struggle program. You know, it's just like manipulating, adjusting, complaining, fault finding, whining, suffering. Because it didn't come out the way that it was supposed to come out. That's the expectation side. So don't take up the process of developing your Krishna consciousness with a predetermined set of expectations. It's going to be like this or like that. Let it be principle-centered. Krishna, you're the master, and I'm the servant. That's what Prahlad Maharaj says. Very nice verse. Wonderful verse. I know that you want to give me a benediction, but I'm not a businessman. My service to you is not, I do this, you give me that. That's not our relationship. Our relationship is, I'm the servant, you're the master, and there's nothing more than that. Nothing more than that. Squeaky clean. Nothing more than that. What's the expectation? You're the master. I'm the servant. Fill in the blanks.
There are these prayers, Vaishnava prayers, like Lal Samay. In that, like desiring some particular, wanting, desiring for advancement. And so my question is that how do we want returns for that desire, and at the same time expectation is
actually. But let the expectation be that my attachment be unto you only. That's advancement. And then from Krishna's side, if he says, whatever he says, the answer is yes. Because of attachment. And that answer that you're going to say yes to may be, I'm not going to give you an indication right away. The answer is yes. But let my attachment be to you only. Whatever it may be. Whatever you do from your side. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Chaitasthakam. He gives a list of options, and it can be beyond those options. You can neglect me, you can embrace me, you can trample me under your feet, etc. Whatever you like. There is an expectation. Let my attraction be unto you only. Let me engage in your devotional service. Under any conditions. And if you pray like that, be ready to, you know, let any condition happen and that prayer continues. Oh, not that. I should have said that, except that. And then something else. No, I should have said except that too. I don't want some of those. I want some of this. But that's pure devotion. Until we're there, then there are expectations, and those expectations are not the platform of pure devotional service. So it leaves one with dissatisfaction, even if those expectations are met. And it can be a cause of fall down, because, you know, look what I've achieved. Taking, you know, credit and pride in one's spiritual achievements, according to Madhurya Kandambani, that's another anartha, being the enjoyer of one's little spiritual success. That's something to be avoided by a thoughtful devotee. And we can worry about that when we become a little spiritually successful. For now, it's just like, you know, get started. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, it's in relation to the auspicious and inauspicious part of the karma. So, the way I think I'm understanding it is depending upon the choice we make in those circumstances, makes that whether we have an auspicious or.
Well, it's also what's happening from Krishna's side, because it's not one-sided. You know, in other words, for a non-devotee, when prarabdha karma happens, it's under the agency of Krishna's external potency. Now, for a devotee, it can be how we make choices. For a devotee, for a non-devotee, there's no choice involved. They're in Maya. Not looking at, you know, should I surrender to Krishna and just, you know. That's the internal potency when we're undergoing purification as devotees. The auspicious opportunity is provided for us. We should understand like that. Circumstances that happen in our devotional service are to provide us with opportunities to surrender and further and serve Krishna further in some specific way. But we can choose otherwise. And then it's, you know, that which was auspicious becomes inauspicious by our choice.
So, like, seeing the merciful nature of Krishna and, one can, instead, like, take it for granted that every situation of life is, like, auspicious.
Yeah, don't take anything for granted. That's a fact. But if one starts taking that for granted, then one can make wrong choices. Auspiciousness means, in this sense, increasing our absorption in thought of Krishna. So things that Krishna sends a devotee's way, whether it's difficulty or something nice, from Krishna's side, it's for the purpose of increasing our absorption in serving Him and thinking of Him. That's from Krishna's side. And we can misuse or properly use that facility. And that makes it inauspicious or auspicious. Yes?
My question is that, you know, a lot of people have a lot of things about the Malay world. And you know that there is a lot of things.
Yes.
And they also like, you just get the information from Krishna. We cannot see Him, and we have food, and we have mentors, and we have food and activities. What happens exactly when we reach the spiritual world?
What happens exactly when we reach the spiritual world?
What are the activities there?
Read the Krishna book, and it describes what the activities there. Or you can read Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopal Kumar returns to the spiritual world, having departed. And it's very, very specific. It's not unclear. And it very much resembles the activities that you find in Krishna book, or, you know, the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. It's just that Krishna welcomes one. You've been away for so long. I've been waiting for you to come back so many lifetimes. Finally, you've come back. Krishna welcomes one into his pastimes. So that's what one does. And then, you know, there's, you say, you know, mentors and spiritual master. We're always, our Krishna consciousness is always expanding. Prabhupada describes this, that before returning to Goloka Vrindavan, one joins Krishna's pastimes in his Brahma Leela, and there's someone who trains one, okay, here's how you do your various services in Krishna's Brahma Leela. It's like, you know, practice. There's Krishna's pastimes. And one is further trained. And then in the spiritual world, there's always further and further and further. It's ever expanding. Getting opportunities to increase one's attachment and loving service to Krishna. And that's what it's like. Yes. That's right. That's right. What's your question? There's a process or a stage of bhakti, anartha nivritti, where you're cleaning all that stuff up. And the strength of anartha nivritti is the strength of your bhajan or bhajana kriya. And your strength of your bhajan or bhajana kriya is the strength of your sadhu sangha. So it's, you know, the horse pulls the cart. And how much horsepower do you have? How strong is your sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya will determine the strength of your anartha nivritti. And you stay the course with sadhu sangha bhajana kriya, gradually the anartha nivritti process becomes more complete. That's described in a very elaborate fashion in Madhuri Kandambani, like this partial, complete, absolute, so on. The degrees to which that happens is described, but the cart, the horse that pulls the cart, is sadhu sangha and bhajana kriya, and then being vigilant what is the favorable to Krishna and what's not favorable to Krishna, and choosing accordingly. Exercising your free will under the guidance of spiritual training. And we have opportunities and opportunities and so many opportunities to properly use or to misuse. And we take the responsibility for both. The fruit of proper